Well, good morning. How's everybody doing? Listen, I am really excited to be with y'all for a couple reasons, but one of the biggest ones is I believe this series that we're starting today is going to be a series that can make a real impact in your life. For the next 5 weeks, as we go through this series, I believe this could be the kind of series that changes the trajectory of this entire fall into the new year. And so I'd encourage you, really dig in, dive into what's going to be taught these next few weeks. Who's ready for students to go back to school? Anybody? Come on, people. My wife and I, we're going to party on Tuesday. Yeah, I mean, as fall kicks in, as students go back to school, as kids go back to school, I mean, routine starts back again, but certainly we get more and more and more busy. And so this series is going to be all about kind of how to navigate that in a way that honors God, I believe, and how to navigate that way where it makes our life feel like we're in line with what God has intended for us. And so a few months ago, I had kind of a 24-hour period that maybe asked the question, does life really have to be this hard? Has anybody else had a day like that before? 24-hour period, I had driven here to the church to come and film something for Chi Alpha. I was doing Jesus work with our students. And a few months before that, I'd actually been hit by a gravel truck and had the whole back left side of my Sequoia pulled off of my vehicle. So I fixed that and everything was fine, but I'd parked on the back side of the property this day and I was filming and we'd finished up. And so I was going to drive away, and as only Trevor Miller can do, I found the only pole within 75 yards of my vehicle. And if you ever like backed into something and you just heard the crunch and you know instantly this is bad, my brain was like, you have got to be kidding me. And I got out and sure enough, I ripped the whole bumper off, the exact same bumper that I had just fixed a few months before, and the taillight. So that was really great. I finished that up. I got back in the vehicle. I drove home. I called my wife on the way home. I was like, listen, don't be mad, but the Sequoia's got a problem again. Back to the bumperless life. And I get home, and my son, my youngest son, had decided it was a good idea to kick out the entire bottom of our back porch door to go out onto the deck. So all the rails, all the screen, everything, kicked it all out. And he was so proud of himself because he had an Owen-sized door to go in and out of the porch all by himself, and along with every creature that wanted to come and spend time on the back porch as well. And so that was nice. And later on that evening, I ended up having to take my golden doodle to the emergency vet middle of the night because somewhere along the months he'd lived with us, he developed a taste for children's socks. And so $350 later and three Ninja Turtle socks later, I got to come home from all that. And I laid in the bed that night and my head on the pillow finally at 2 a.m. and I thought to myself, there has got to be a better way. Like life shouldn't be this hard. And chances are I'm not the only person in the room who's ever felt that before. I mean, maybe I hear you. Maybe you've had a day or days or maybe months or maybe even years where you've looked back and you've said, this can't be this hard. Like, this is not the way life should be intended to be. And maybe you've asked the question, maybe I'm working against life and I'm not working with life. Perhaps I'm just going the opposite direction the way it's intended to go. Maybe I could do something about this. Maybe there could be a life hack for me that could change it all as well, just like the videos you saw earlier. Maybe there's a simple thing that I could do that would change things just enough where my life may begin to change just a bit. Anybody ever heard of a life hack before? Social media has made this extremely popular in the past couple of years, but life hacks are essentially techniques or strategies that you can implement into your life to make life more efficient and more effective. That sounds good, doesn't it? Simple little things that you can do that make a really huge difference. So I'm going to show you a couple of pictures of some life hacks that are super helpful. Now, I want to tell you already, you are welcome for every single one of these today as you leave. It'll change everything. Here's the first one. Place upright these popsicles. That way, freezing, you're guaranteed to cut it clean without any of the juice being there. Any other parents wish they would have known this at the beginning of the summer? I mean, that's genius. Like, we're living in the Stone Age, and these people are, like, stacking these things up, making sure you don't cut anything off. How about this one? You ever had problems with, like, these bumps in your sweater? You fold it this way instead, and you don't have the bumps when you take it out. Ladies, anybody? I don't have a lot of problems with my sweaters, but this would probably help. Next one, for all the men in the room. Next time your wife's like, can you clean the bathroom? You're like, no problem. Watch this. Now, this last one, I want to preface it for a moment, because if I would have known this particular life hack, this little piece of information, this thing to implement in my life, my whole childhood would have been different. It would have changed everything. So check out this picture. Do you realize when you go and you get a ketchup cup, if you pull the sides of that ketchup cup, you can hold three times as much ketchup in the exact same thing? I mean, that blew my mind. I've been doing it wrong my entire life. Like, what if we were to slow down enough within our life and realize that potentially some of the things that we've been doing, some of the ways that we've been living, we've been working against life as opposed to working with life. Maybe God has put together life in such a way that if we were to change just some small things, some little things, we might begin to find a life that is more efficient, more effective. I'm afraid that too many of us in the room, we walk around with this low-grade, smoldering frustration just below the surface at all the things that we experience for whatever reason. And maybe your problem is not just dents in your sweater or not enough ketchup in your cup, but potentially it's like bigger stuff. It's marriage, it's parenting, it's jobs, it's addiction, it's hurt, it's pain. These are real things. But even in these things, I believe God has given us some direction to be able to live out life in such a way where it might change everything. I mean, certainly you can't control every circumstance and every situation of your life. You can't. But the thing is, you are still a part of the mix. And I'm afraid for a lot of us, myself first in line, I've made some decisions in my life that has made my life more difficult than it has to be. I have not made some decisions that have made my life more difficult than it has to be. You know, I've found maybe a bill that's come in the mail, and I've been reading that bill being like, who in the world bought? And then as I'm reading, I'm like, oh, me. Or I get to the end of my work week, and I'm like, I have so much to do still. And if I'm honest, I would have I've wasted so much of my time earlier in the week. It's my own fault. Like, how many times, if we are honest, really, truly honest, some of the reasons that we feel like we grind through life, some of the reasons that we feel like there's frustration just below the surface is because of decisions that we've either made or we've not made. And so maybe life doesn't have to be this hard. Maybe there are some things that we could do that would change things for the better. You know, God has offered us all kinds of life hacks all throughout Scripture. And here's kind of the essence of today's message. If we just started to do some of the things that we've already read and know about, it would already change things. If we were just to open this up and read it and apply it and do it, even that alone may change some things. But specifically from the book of Proverbs, I believe we find the greatest hack of all time, the greatest life hack that could change everything, unlock an entire new life for every single one of us who are here this morning. The book of Proverbs is a book that's found in the Old Testament, and this is one of 66 books in the Bible. And the book of Proverbs is actually known as a wisdom book because the whole book is packed full of all kinds of wisdom. So you have writers of different kinds that have contributed to the book, but the biggest writer that has contributed to the book is King Solomon. And if you've been in church at all within your life, you probably know King Solomon was considered to be one of the smartest people, one of the wisest people who's ever lived. And so the book of Proverbs is a compilation of all of these wise sayings and pieces of wisdom all put into one book. Now, this book would have been used within a school setting, and so you would have young men who were learning to become leaders and scholars within the community, and they would read this book to them as a way of teaching them wisdom to know how to live their life and to make the choices they need to make as they get older. And so oftentimes, as you read the book of Proverbs, it's written in such a way where it'll say, son, listen to your father, listen to these wise words. Because again, it's being taught to these boys, and oftentimes these leadership figures were saying, listen to your father, listen to what I have to say, and apply it to your life. So 31 chapters of wisdom in the book of Proverbs, 31. In the entire book, it has nothing to do with what kind of IQ you have. This wisdom has nothing to do with your GPA or how good you are at HQ on your phone. It has nothing to do with any of these things. This wisdom has everything to do with whether or not you take the information that you are given and you apply it to your life. It's not about knowing the right things. It's about doing the right things with the stuff that you already know. That's called wisdom. It's information applied. This is what the book of Proverbs is all about. I mean, maybe even as you grew up, you had someone, a parent figure, or an aunt or an uncle who had some kind of wisdom they tried to drill into your head every time you turned around as a kid. Maybe even now as an adult person, you can think back and be like, oh, my dad used to always say, my mom used to always say this piece of wisdom. My son Eli, I'm trying to teach him and I'm trying to drill this one thing into his head. Every time he does really good at something or he excels in some kind of way, which is often, he's a really great kid. Every time that happens, I'm really quick to say to him, yes, but stay humble, hustle hard. And oftentimes I'll say, what do we say? And he'll be like, stay humble, hustle hard. I'm like, yes, that's right. And I will keep drilling that in his head because one day when he's 35 years old, like his dad, I want him to think back and say, you know, my dad used to say this thing. And now that I'm older, I get it. Now that I'm older, I've applied it. And now that I've applied it, it makes complete and total sense. This book of Proverbs is chock full of this kind of wisdom. The first 9 chapters, the writers over and over again kind of riff on this one thing. There are two women they represent that represents folly and wisdom, wise choices and foolish choices. And basically, those first nine chapters are convincing every person who's reading, I would never want to choose the foolish choice because it always turns out bad. I would always want to choose the wise choice because it always turns out good. And starting in chapter 10, you begin to get all of these pieces of wisdom given to you all the way through chapter 31. So that when you read it, you're like, of course I would choose the wise choice. Why would I choose anything else? This is the book that we're going to be studying over the next few weeks. This book is full of all kinds of good stuff. In fact, I would encourage you during these 5 weeks, begin to read the book of Proverbs. You could probably read the entire thing in these 5 weeks, no problem at all. And it's a bit like a multivitamin. It's kind of a different topic, each and every verse that you read, but it's super helpful. But I believe the ultimate piece of wisdom that we get within this book, the ultimate life hack for our life, comes in chapter 9, and we also read it earlier in chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 9, verses 9 through 11 says this. I want to sit on this first verse first. Instruct the wise, and they will become wiser still. Teach the righteous, and they will add to their learning. Instruct the wise, and if you do, what happens? They become wiser still. How many of us within our life, we have convinced ourselves at some point in time or another that we've finally arrived? Like, I'm not as dumb as I used to be. I'm way smarter now. Now that I've gotten here, I get it. I understand all of life. Proverbs says in chapter 9, guess what? No matter how wise you've gotten, you can get wiser still. There's more information out there. There's other understandings out there. So no matter who you are or where you've come from, Proverbs says there's more out there to learn. In fact, scientists tell us that until 1900, within history, human knowledge, the collective of human knowledge, doubled approximately every century. Every 100 years, the collective knowledge of the world would double. Then scientists say by the end of World War II, that number had gone down to every 25 years, the collective knowledge would double once again. Scientists tell us now that every 13 months, the collective knowledge of the world doubles. You know what that tells me? No matter how much I know, there's more to be known. No matter how long you've been a follower of Jesus, there's more to know. No matter how long you've been a parent, there's more to know. We never actually arrive. So Proverbs says, instruct the wise, and if you do, they'll become wiser still. Verse 10 says this then. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Verse 11. For through wisdom, your days will be many, and your years will be added to your life. This says, because of this wisdom, because of this information applied within your life, it can impact your life in a very, very positive kind of way. The days will be added to your life. It's not just about information. It's about application. It's not just about what you know. It's what you do with what you know. Listen, everyone in here who's grown up in the church, chances are you've heard a sermon on pretty much every topic that you could ever hear the rest of your life. Here's the problem. Most of us don't actually do it. That's the difference between information and wisdom. Wisdom is information applied. I believe this morning that wisdom is the greatest, the ultimate life hack of all time. I would contend this morning that our culture is bankrupt on wisdom. Our culture is bankrupt on wisdom. You don't believe me? I want you to go and read a little bit of news for about 5 minutes. I want you to turn on a news channel for an hour and then turn it off immediately. Very easily, very quickly, you will begin to learn that we as a culture are bankrupt on wisdom. The first question that we ask is never, what's the wisest choice? The first question we ask is, what would make me the most money? What would get me the most likes? What would give me the most influence? What would get me out of trouble the quickest? What would make me the happiest? And when we start with these kinds of questions, rather than what's the wisest choice, we will always find ourselves with this low-grade frustration, feeling like we're working against life and not with life. Because our God has put together the world in a certain kind of way. Maybe even now, as I'm talking, you can think to one situation or instance in your life that you're so frustrated by. And maybe, if we're honest, maybe it's because you're working against the way the world was meant to work, the way wisdom would cause us to go. Proverbs chapter 4, verses 6 and 7 says it this way, do not forsake wisdom, and she will protect you. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is this. I love this. Get wisdom. Here's the beginning of wisdom. Get it. No matter what it costs you, get it. It's that kind of important. Though it may cost you all you have, wisdom is that important that it's worth it. Because I'm afraid many in the room, we've actually lost all we have already because of a lack of wisdom.
If you want wisdom, it's worth anything that it costs you, because otherwise your life may be out of order, because wisdom is not first. Verse 10 says it this way: the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You want to know where wisdom starts? Where this life hack begins? It begins with a fear of the Lord. It begins with what I would call keeping the main thing, the fear of the Lord. All throughout my life, I've been horrible at math, which is not that bad because I'm a youth pastor, so all I got to really do is count to 200. It doesn't take like a mathematical equation to know how many kids are in the van to make sure I've got everybody. I'm pretty good at that. But I've never been good at math. And I've always struggled with math. All the way through high school, all the way through college, it was difficult for me. In fact, without a friend named Sarah in high school, I never would have made it through pre-Cal. That would have been the end of the road for me. But she helped me, and I got through. But if I look back in my life, there was something that took place a long time before that that caused me to have the issue that I had. My family had moved from Indiana to Kentucky when I was in fourth grade, and so I had entered into this new elementary school, and I was doing fine. Everything was cool, and within the first couple weeks, there was an opportunity for me to take an assessment, and so I took that test, and they said, hey, we're going to move you to a different school. There's some accelerated opportunities for you, and I was like, accelerated? That sounds interesting. So I ended up going to this new school, and within the first couple days of that new school, I realized and began to see that every kid in the room except for, guess who? Me, knew how to speak Spanish, and every kid in the room except for, guess who? Me knew how to do multiplication tables. I had no clue. And so literally every day we would have this time where we would go to these different stations and stuff, and the kids would always go to this one station. There'd be flashcards that we would do together. And I realized really quickly, I have no idea how to do this. And so what I started doing is, instead of learning the trick to doing multiplication, I started memorizing what each card looked like. So I knew when that card comes up, here's the answer. Boom, and I would say the number. But I really wasn't learning how to do it. That was a foundational piece for me that was missing, so that later on, when everything else built upon that, guess what? I had no idea what was going on. The same is true, I believe, when Proverbs says in chapter 9, the beginning of wisdom is this. It's the foundational piece. It's the most important part. It's the main thing. Fear the Lord. Fear the Lord. It's the beginning of wisdom. And in fact, without this, we will always find ourselves fighting against the way the world was meant to work. See, I'm afraid for many of us in this room, you just have done the same thing I've done in math when it comes to our faith in God. We just fake it. We just show up on the weekend. We read our Bible occasionally. We tithe regularly. But when it comes to our actual faith in God, it's just a to-do list. We don't really know why we're doing it or what's the purpose. And in doing so, we've missed out on what it really means to fear God. I mean, even talking to people earlier from the first service, so many came and said, listen, fear the Lord? I had no idea what that meant when I was a kid. I was terrified of that. That sounds like a terrible life hack. Hey, you know what? Just fear God. But it's not about being paralyzed in fear about a God and what he might do to us, smite us, or hurt us in some kind of way. That is not what this word means. In fact, when the writers wrote this, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. This word they're using for fear, this phrase in this form or fashion shows up over 50 times within the scriptures. 50 times. And this word they're using is the word yirah. Everyone say yirah. It's a fun word. This word actually, when it's translated more accurately, it actually means awe, wonder, or reverence. So the fear of the Lord is not about being afraid of God. It's about being in awe of him, in wonder of him, in reverence toward him. Really understanding and recognizing the position that God is in versus the position that I'm in, the bigness of who God is and the smallness of who I am. This is what it means to fear God. This is the beginning of wisdom. This is the foundation. This is what the writers are trying to convince us of. And not only that, but the Hebrew sages in the old, when they used to speak about this word, this fear of the Lord, they would couple it with another word that meant to see, or it meant like the way that you see things. And so when you put these together, the fear of the Lord was really about being in awe and wonder and in reverence towards God and the way that we see everything. It changes our perspective. For instance, have you ever been with a group of friends, maybe hiking somewhere, you've driven through the mountains of North Carolina, you've come to like a beautiful overlook, and maybe you've hiked all the way up there and it took hours to get there, but you finally see and you're on the summit, you can see for miles. Guess what everybody does every single time? Check this next time. When you come to a view like that, everybody walks up to the edge, and guess what they do? They get quiet. Like nobody says anything. Because all of a sudden you can't breathe because you just hiked up, but also because you're seeing how big all of this is. You're taking it all in. And all of a sudden, the things that you used to worry about a few thousand feet below you, back at your house, all the first world problems that we've struggled with, this one view, this one thing that you've done now that you're seeing, it's brought everything into perspective. It's showing you what's truly important. The same thing is true if you ever spent time with anyone who's on their deathbed, staring death in the face. The conversations that you have are very different from the ones you used to have. See, the conversations aren't about fantasy football anymore or Cardi B, and it's not about your 401k or any of these other things. The conversations change because they become about priorities in life when someone realizes and recognizes they have a few hours to live or a few days to live. It brings it all into perspective. Here's what the fear of the Lord is. Here's where wisdom begins. It's when you are in such awe and wonder and reverence of God that you interact with everything. You see everything through that lens first. God is so amazing. When is the last time you slowed your life down enough to be able to look and just say, wow, God, wow. When's the last time you looked at your kids and you just thought, wow, what a gift from God. When is the last time you were out on Lake Murray or on the ocean, you just looked out and you're just like, wow. We have lost the art of being in awe and wonder and reverence of God. And in doing so, we've lost this fear of the Lord. And in doing so, we've neglected the foundational piece of where wisdom begins. No wonder we struggle so much within our life. No wonder we have such a difficult time making decisions and doing the right things. It's because the foundation is missing. This awe and wonder and reverence of God. In fact, what's interesting to me is this book that we're going to be looking through. I'm afraid that too many of us, what Proverbs is pointing out is that we've been chasing all the wrong things. The priorities have been out of whack. We've been after other things than what's truly important. In fact, the writer that wrote the main piece of Proverbs, King Solomon, when God comes to him and says, hey, what do you want? I'll give you anything. I can imagine what I would ask for. Guess what King Solomon asks for? Wisdom. Give me wisdom that I may know the way to lead. Give me wisdom that I might know the choices to make. Give me wisdom so that I'd be able to live with life and not against life. That I would enter into this stream that you have, God, within my life. That I'd be in tune with the way that you want me to live instead of chasing after things that don't actually matter. Oscar Wilde, the late 1800s poet and playwright, said it this way. He said, there are only two tragedies in life. One is not getting what one wants, and the other is getting what they want. I mean, how many of us, we have gone after these certain priorities of life, the promotion, to get married, to get to this certain school, to get rich, to be the best, and we've gotten there, we've still looked around and said, there's got to be more than this. That's wisdom. It's not about all these other things. The beginning of wisdom is a fear of the Lord, awe and wonder and reverence. Begin here. This is the main thing. And keep the main thing. It's foundational. This shift in perspective will make another massive shift within our life and introduce us to another life hack that we could introduce within us. And it's this. Stop expecting life to behave. Stop expecting life to behave because it never will. There's so many students who I come across and I spend time talking with, and if they're honest, they're angry with God because their life has not gone the way they've wanted it to. And sometimes it's big, difficult struggles, and sometimes it's so mundane. But they struggle because their life is not what they expected it to be. And how many Christians, they get frustrated with God because they thought being a Christian was synonymous with the perfect life. And that's not what we end up with. That's hard to swallow sometimes. But you know, Jesus promised us this. He says it in the gospel. He's like, listen, just so you know, in this life you will have trouble. It will not go good for you all of the time. There will be difficulties and struggles. But then he says this, but do not worry, for I have overcome the world. But don't be surprised when life doesn't behave, because it's never going to. And the book of Proverbs is not meant to be taken to help us tame our life, because we'll never be able to do it. Here's the best parenting advice I can give you as a parent of just a few years. And this is super helpful. You actually may want to write it down. Here's what you should do as a parent. Stop expecting your children to behave. That's it. Because as I'm watching my boys punch each other out in the backyard and spill the third colored drink on the carpet they were told not to take into the living room, as all this is happening, I had this expectation of what this would be like. Like, being a dad would be so fun. And being a parent, it would all be so great. I'd be proud all the time. And if you're a parent in the room, you know this is just not true. This is not how it goes. But here's what I would say. If you're never expecting them to behave, then you're never actually disappointed. And here's the best thing. When they do something awesome, you're like, wow. And what if you could take this and you could actually apply it to your life as well? Like, what if you were not expecting life to be a certain way? So then when it's not, you're never disappointed. You know, actually, researchers and scientists did a study to try to find out what was the happiest country in the world. What's the happiest country in the world? And guess who it was not? The United States of America. Even with all of our affluence and influence and power, it wasn't Italy with its cuisine or romantic locations. They weren't the happiest. It wasn't Belgium with all of their waffles and things. Here's who it was. Denmark. Denmark, they determined, is the happiest country in the world. But what's most shocking to me is not that they were the happiest, but it's why they were the happiest. Here's what they found in their research. The reason Denmark is the happiest country in the world is because they have lowered expectations. They're not expecting to be the best, the most famous, the richest, the most influential. They're not expecting it. They realize that life is going to be a bit of a grab bag. It's not going to go as planned. And in finding this, they've been able to find real, true happiness in the middle of it. Like, what if that alone, what if we were to put the main thing, fear the Lord as the beginning of wisdom, and through that wisdom, what if we were able to look at our life and say, you know what, maybe I've been expecting something from my life that it can't possibly deliver. Like, what if I could come to the realization that the happiness I'm expecting from my wife, she can't actually do that for me. One, it's not her job, and she's not God. And what if you're expecting this certain happiness and joy to come from your children and you come to realize that that's actually not their job? They can't do that. Or your job, you're expecting that to make you feel fulfilled and happy and great. Or your 401k, the bank account, you name it, the house on the lake, all of this stuff was meant to make me happy. And guess what? I'm here and I'm still not happy. Maybe because it couldn't do it in the first place. That's not where it begins. It begins with a fear of the Lord. This may sound depressing. Just lower your expectations, everything will be fine. But I don't think it is. I think it's freeing. I think it's freeing to realize that I have no control over my life, but guess who does? God. Like, the book of Proverbs is not focused on trying to keep you out of adversity. That's not the point of the book. The point is to teach you how to respond when adversity comes. Those are two completely different things. The book of Proverbs, this wisdom that we get from God, is actually teaching us to say, the question is not, why, God? Why is this happening? The question is, what now, God? How should I respond in the middle of this? I'll show you in the book of Proverbs. Here's a bit of an interesting thing. These Proverbs even seem to contradict one another sometimes. Proverbs 26, verses 4 and 5. Here's what it says. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself may be just like him. But the very next verse says this. Answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll be wise in his own eyes. So which one do I do? Do I answer the fool or do I not answer the fool? And the answer seems to be yes. Yes. But here's the thing. There may be certain times in your life when this is the wisest choice. And there may be other times in your life where this other thing is the wisest choice. This is why it's so important for us to live our life in tune with the way the world works, to work with life and not against it, to work in tune with the way God is working within the world. He helps us discern what is the right thing to do when it's the right thing to do it. You can take that information can become applied within your life, and it becomes wisdom. Life is not A plus B equals C. It's not neat and tidy. It doesn't play by the rules. It was never intended to. And we were never intended to get it all of the time. But God has given us these pieces of wisdom to help us live it out each and every day in whatever circumstance, in whatever situation. Now, if I'm honest, even after all of this discussion, it can still feel like I'm living my life like trying to put together a puzzle with no lid. You know, I've got all these pieces, and I see the colors that kind of match together, but I have no idea what I'm actually trying to put together, and so I don't know how to actually put it together. That's difficult. And honestly, that's where most people live within their life. But there is another piece of information that I believe can change all of that, and it comes in John chapter 1, verse 14. John chapter 1, verse 14, the writer says this: "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us." Who are we talking about here? Jesus. This word, Word, has a capital W. It's referring to someone. Jesus came in the flesh, and he was the Word, and he made his dwelling among us. We've seen the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Here's what this verse says to me. The writer of the book of John, he's Jewish in nature. He's writing from a Jewish perspective. And so when he says the Word became flesh, what he's saying is all of this collective wisdom from Jewish past, all the prophets, all the wisdom literature, all the things that have been written, when Jesus shows up on the scene, he shows us what it looks like in the flesh. Jesus is the personification of wisdom. He's wisdom personified. So if you want to know how to live your life, here's what this means. Look no further than the Son of God. If you want to know the way that we should live our life, look no further than the life, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. He is our example. He is the lid to the box. He shows us what our life should actually look like. Because here's what I'm convinced of. Jesus did not just come to save us. I mean, certainly he did. But that was not the only purpose. Jesus also came to show us how to live. He came to demonstrate how you love people and love them well. He came to demonstrate what sacrificial love looks like. He came to demonstrate the way that we teach people and love people and treat people. He came to show us what priorities we should have within our life. He is the example. So perhaps the frustrations that we have within our life, the grind that we feel too often, is because we're working against life and not with it. And if Jesus could become this example for us, if we exemplify our life after him, it may change everything. Because here's what he says in John chapter 10, verse 10, in closing. Jesus says, and it's interesting, Janice actually read this earlier. Jesus says, "The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But I have come to give you life, and life to the full." I don't know about you, but that's what I want. I want a full life. I do not want the evil one to be able to get into my life and steal and kill and take away what God has for me. And when I find myself working against life, when I find myself neglecting wisdom, then I find myself as a first part of that verse. But when I hear Jesus, when I see Jesus, when I live my life in that kind of way, I experience full life. This day that you've been given, this life that you have been given, it is a gift. It's a gift. It's time, I believe, for us to stop working against life and start working with it. To take the wisdom from God and apply it to ourselves and see what could possibly happen. Would you bow with me this morning? Let's pray together. Father God, I'll be the first to confess that too often I don't listen to the wisdom that you give me. I don't really live it out, and I certainly don't exemplify the kind of life that Christ exemplified within Scripture. But would you show me, Father, help me to discern when I should do one thing or another. And God, I pray for every person in this room, and even this morning, if you feel like your life is just a bit frustrating, like you're kind of in this grind, you're not sure where to go, would you just raise your hand, because I want to pray for you that God would give you wisdom that you could receive and apply. Would you just raise your hand boldly? God, I pray for every person with their hand raised this morning. God, I pray for your mercy and your grace within their life. I pray, God, they would begin to be in awe and wonder and reverence towards you. And I pray, God, that would be the beginning of wisdom for them. I pray that they would do what you've called them to do. I pray that they'd apply it to their life, and I pray it would change everything. So, God, thank you for the love of your Son, Jesus. Thank you for the peace that he brings us within our life. And I pray, God, that you'd help us to be able to introduce some of these things within us. I pray, God, you would change us. It's in your name that we pray. Amen. Just for a moment, would you just kind of sit in that awe, that wonder, and that reverence? I want you to hear the words that we're going to sing in just a moment.